In chapter 5.10, we will treat quasi-Newton methods. We have already discussed the Newton methods, and there you remember the characteristic feature was that we know the exact Hessian matrix, which is the matrix of the second derivatives. In a quasi-Newton method, you don't know the exact Hessian, you know approximate Hessians, and actually those approximate Hessians, you don't calculate them explicitly, they are in a certain sense a byproduct of this iterative process. Let's understand how that works. So let's first look at equation 63. This equation shows how you can calculate the Hessian matrix as a finite difference if from gradient vectors. So you see the first column of this matrix, for instance, is a difference between the gradient vector at a position r plus h times e1, which is a unit vector along direction 1. So, I mean, the typical case we are considering is that we want to minimize an energy. And then, of course, this vector r contains all the positions of the atoms in our system. And then this unit vector e1 would just be, for instance, the x-coordinate of the first atom. Okay, so the first column is now this vector g of r plus h times e1 minus g of r. Of course, we know how to calculate such finite differences. I mean, here essentially I've given the lowest possible order finite difference. Of course, numerically you could do better, but that's a different story now. So in the end, of course, this index small I, which goes from 1 to n, goes actually up to 3 times the number of atoms, right? That's small n is actually 3 times the number of atoms. And of course, the resulting matrix is a 3n by 3n matrix, right? If you have n molecules in our system, n atoms in our system. Okay, let's now denote by capital GI the difference vector between two gradients. And okay, GI means that I look at just this difference, which is in the first column. So G of R plus H times EI minus G of R. Yeah, then if we have a quadratic form and this H is small, then of course we know that the matrix element Aij is given just by the scalar product of this vector capital Gi times the unit vector Ej. And well, we still have to divide by h. Yeah, so that's would be a possibility to calculate the Hessian matrix. As I told you already, in this quasi-Newton method, you don't explicitly calculate the Hessian matrix. You just build it up iteratively, so that means actually in each iteration the Hessian matrix becomes better. Actually it becomes better in the sense that its dimension is growing. So you, let's say in the first step, actually you don't have any approximate Hessian. Then in the second step you have a scalar, a 1x1 matrix. In the third step you have a 2x2 matrix. In the fourth step a 3x3 matrix, and so on. And actually then those spaces of dimension 1 to 3, we call them subspaces. So that means you have actually the Hessian matrix in a subspace, right, which has of course a dimension which is much, much smaller than the full dimension of 3n. Yeah, now let's look what we do if we just do a standard minimization, where we move our system from coordinates capital R to some coordinates capital R plus D, which is a displacement. Yeah, then of course we can now calculate the function along this direction D. And so it's a one-dimensional function which depends on alpha, right? It's the energy at the position capital R plus alpha times D, so a one-dimensional function. And then of course we can calculate the first and second derivative. Actually, since this vector D is not necessarily a unit vector, I still have to apply some kind of normalization. I have to divide by the norm of D squared. And then, okay, I calculate a first derivative. Of course, a first derivative brings me from the energy to the gradient. So I have then as a gradient, g of r plus alpha d. And then if I differentiate as a second time, well, then I obtain, of course, it's only approximately, it would be true only in the limit where alpha is very small, then I obtain this final result in equation 64, which tells us that it's just a scalar product g of d with g, and then just divided by this normalization factor. Yeah, so so we see indeed, right, that, I mean, if we set up a sequence of updates, and then if we kind of exploit the information that we have from the different gradients at the different points of our iteration, then actually we can obtain information about the second derivatives and therefore about the Hessian. So now, if in all those analysis methods of, especially convergence analysis methods of those iterative minimization methods, of course, as I told you already, we assume that our function is quadratic. And then if the function is quadratic, then, right, of course, the gradient is just a matrix applied on a vector. So g of d is a times d. And then this now subspace Hessian matrix with respect now to some non-orthogonal set of vectors di is then, of course, just given by, that's equation 65 now, the scalar product between g of di and dj. So, okay, let's call that bij, right, because it's not the aij, it's not the Hessian matrix in the full space, it's in a subspace, and actually it's in a non-orthogonal subspace, right? This sequence of di's, they are not also normal. And to take that into account, actually we have to set up still kind of this, what you can call either overlap matrix or a Gram matrix, S, which is then just given by the scalar product between di and dj. And then if you want now to find the curvature, so the, you have to solve an eigenvalue problem, which is given by equation 66, right, where we just have this subspace Hessian times an eigenvector vl is equal to lambda times this overlap matrix times vl. Okay, so in this way we can get the curvatures, and then of course you remember that's what we have discussed also before. We know that the step size now in a direction given by an eigenvector of this equation 66, right? So curvature along this direction is then lambda L, and so yeah, if we move, we know we should have a step size which is roughly 1 over the curvature. Okay, so yes, that's a basic idea. So of course we see here that this equation 66 will be problematic if this overlap matrix is singular. That means if we have several vectors di that are parallel, that don't span a higher dimensional space. And actually that can occur, and that can especially occur if you are kind of far away from a minimum, so where the assumption that we are in a quadratic region is not true. And therefore actually this Quasi-Newton method is typically problematic if you have a poor input guess. So if you are far away, then probably it's better to first do a few steps of a steepest descent, and then only once you are in the quadratic region, where anyway then we know that the convergence rate will be faster in this quasi-Newton method, then you switch over to the quasi-Newton methods. Yeah, there are those quasi-Newton methods are very popular. They are considered in many cases to be kind of the most efficient minimization methods. And there's especially one variant which is called BFGS, which is an appropriation for the inventors, Bruidens, Fletcher, Goldfarb, and Janu. And yeah, that is a very good method, except that, remember in each step, right, our subspace, where we know this subspace Hamiltonian is increasing by one, And it turns out that if this subspace becomes too big, then actually the method frequently fails. And for that reason, there's now a variant of this BFGS method, which is called LBFGS, where the L stands for limited memory. And so in this method, kind of you allow your subspace Hamiltonian only to grow up to a certain dimension. So it's typically something like 10. So that means you have only kind of, you have a history, you exploit information from the last 10 iterations. So that seems perhaps to be a very small subspace, because I mean, the whole Hessian matrix might be a very large matrix, like 1000 by 1000. Nevertheless, it turns out if you use a history length or a subspace of at most 10, the convergence rate is already pretty comparable to the convergence rate that you would obtain either if you have a much longer history length, or then of course in this case you would probably rather use anyway from the beginning the exact Newton method. Okay, so that, yeah, as I said, this LBFGS is really a widely used method, which is considered to be more or less optimal for many optimization problems which have a more or less quadratic form. Yeah, in the next exercise, actually, you can just kind of verify yourself that if you have a sequence of different gradients, that from this sequence of different gradients, you can extract information about the curvature. So you can set up some kind of subspace Hamiltonian. Yeah, in the next chapter, 5.11, I will discuss the so-called DIIS method, which stands for direct inversion in iterative subspace. So we assume for the moment, just to derive the algorithm, that we know the exact solution, and we denote it by C infinity. And then we say, well, we start an iteration where we generate some sequence of CIs, where I, let's say, starts at 1, and if we do m iterations, it goes up to n. And we have then also a set of m approximate vectors. Okay, and then we want this iteration to continue. And we do then the following. So in equation 67, I just define now the so-called error vector, right, which is the difference between your approximate solution Cm in iteration m minus the infinity, that means minus the exact solution. Of course, in practice, since you don't know the exact solution, you cannot really calculate Em from this equation, but it's just a definition. So now we form a new vector Cm, which is just a Cm tilde, sorry, some kind of intermediate vector, which is just a sum over all the previous Cis, well, of course, multiplied by some coefficients Di. Now, of course, it would be nice if this Cm tilde is the exact solution, or let's say very close to the exact solution. And it turns out that that leads us to some condition that can be then exploited numerically. So in equation 69, right, we write now the exact solution, we write it as an linear combinations of these those CIs. And then we use equation 67, right, which tells us that the Ci, right, is nothing but the C infinity plus the error vector. We get an equation 70, then we just split up the sum in two parts. And now in equation 71, of course, we see that this equation would be fulfilled if the sum over all the Di's gives 1. And then if this second sum, the sum of 1 up to m over di times ei, if that was 0. Okay, now, of course, remember that those ei's, right, those error vectors, of course, they are also very long vectors. Again, I mean, if you have an energy minimization problem for geometry optimization, then this error vector, of course, also would have length 3n. And on the other hand, of course, we want to have a short number of iterations. So this m should be a rather small value. So m, right, is typically probably much less than the length of those vectors ei. And then, of course, we know that in general, we cannot find coefficients di such that this sum over di times ei is exactly zero. Right? In to fulfill these conditions, we would need kind of 3m coefficients di in general. Okay, so if we cannot ask this quantity to be exactly zero, nevertheless, we can actually ask it to be minimal in the sense that the length of this vector, the norm squared, is minimal. So this equation 73. Yeah, so we see actually this equation 73, of course, is a quadratic form. So if we want to find the minimum, we have to differentiate, and then we will get a linear form. That means a linear system of equations. And well, the resulting system of linear equations is given in equation 74. And you see here this matrix that we have here in this equation 74, right? It contains now the scalar products between all the different error vectors, right? That of course comes from this equation 73. And then the last row and the last column, right, comes from the fact that the sum over the di should be equal to 1. So essentially, you can consider that also as a Lagrange multiplier approach. And so we have this additional row and column in the system of equations that we have to solve. Yeah, so this system of equations is typically rather small, right? I mean, we want to have fast convergence. Perhaps we want that we obtain convergence after some 30 or 40, 50 iterations, perhaps, which means that this matrix that you find in equation 74 is also kind of small. It has perhaps at most typically a dimension of 50 times 50 or something like that. Okay. So now the question, of course, is here in equation 74, we assume that we know the error vectors, right? And of course, the error vectors we don't know, because in order to calculate the error vectors, we would need the exact solution, which we still don't have. But it turns out that actually this method still converges, actually typically very rapidly, if you approximate your error vectors, right? And the exact error vector, right? We know for a quadratic form would be a to the minus 1 applied on the gradient G, right? So a to the minus 1 is the inverse Hessian matrix applied on the gradient. We know that very frequently we replace this a to the minus 1 by this so-called preconditioning matrix, which should be similar to a to the minus 1 but much simpler to calculate. And that's also what we do here. And so we put just ei equals a preconditioning matrix times gi. Okay, now, right, by solving this linear system of equations 74, we obtain those coefficients di. And those coefficients di, right, if we go back to equation 68, those equations di then allow us to calculate this intermediate quantity cm tilde. And this intermediate quantity cm tilde is then used now to calculate again the gradient at that point. That's then this intermediate gradient gm tilde. And then the final update, so that means to obtain the next cm plus 1, that's now equation 76. There you take this cm tilde minus again a preconditioning matrix applied on the gm tilde. So that step essentially is the step that you would have also, right, in a preconditioned steepest descent approach, with just the difference that kind of those tilde quantities are now calculated in a kind of more sophisticated way. So this DIS method now can be implemented in two different versions that I will now briefly discuss. And in the first version, you can have a variable preconditioner. So this matrix P that we have just introduced in our discussion now can be different from one iteration to the next. In addition, actually, we also can use, if you remember, there were two steps where we had to apply a preconditioning matrix somewhere, and we can also kind of use, if you want to, actually different preconditioning matrices in those two steps. So P can equal to be equal to PM, and this P tilde can be equal to PM tilde. Okay, now in on this page 80, you see some equations that are given in blue. So that means that's a calculation that has really done, that has to be done on the computer, whereas all the other formulas that are not in blue are just derivations. And so what do we have to do? I mean, in equation 77, of course, we have to calculate first the gradient Gm. And that is actually in most applications the most expensive part to do. And then, yeah, then we have to calculate approximate error vectors by applying a preconditioning matrix Pm on our gradients Gi. And then, okay, we solve our linear system of equations to get the Di's and therefore this Cm tilde. Okay, then in equation 79, that shows us, right, we need now this, in principle, this Gm tilde. And yeah, that's of course by definition the gradient at the point Cm tilde. And now if you assume that our function is quadratic, then the gradient is linear. And then if I put in for Cm the sum, right, then I can pull the sum outside of this gradient. And I get the sum over Di times the gradients at the point Ci. And that's by definition, of course, nothing but the sum over Di times Gi. Okay, so that Gm tilde can be calculated very easily. Okay, then I want to go now from my tilde quantities to the quantities without the tilde in equation 80. And here I just, yeah, I take this this Gm tilde that was calculated previously, apply a precondition and Pm tilde on it, and then subtract this quantity from the Cm tilde. And then I have the new updated Cm plus 1. Okay, so we see that in this implementation, we have to store three sequences of vectors, namely the Ci's, the Gi's, and the Ei's. Well, if the application of the preconditioning matrix is cheap, then actually the Ei's could, in principle, be calculated on the flies. But typically, actually, on a modern computer, kind of storing those three sequences is no problem whatsoever, because as we have seen, right, those sequences are fairly short, perhaps, yeah, I don't know, 50, at most 100, and so storing them actually is not a problem in general on a modern computer. Okay, the next version now is a little bit simpler. Here I don't now allow the preconditioning matrix to change from one iteration to the next, and also I request this preconditioning matrix to be identical in the two steps where it is applied in this DIS method. So then here again, I calculate the gradient Gm, equation 81. I calculate approximate error vectors in equation 82. Then I solve my system of linear equations, equation 74, to get the Di's, and in this way I get the Cm tilde. Okay, and then actually everything in equation 83 is just the standard deviation that we have, derivation of the formulas that we have already seen. And then in equation 84, I can directly now calculate the Cm plus 1, right, which is by definition the Cm tilde minus the preconditioning matrix times the Gm tilde. Well, and if I put in all the definitions there, I just see it becomes the sum over I to M Di times the difference between Ci and Ei. Yeah, so in this case, I have just to store two sequences, the Ci's and the Ei's. And so actually the storage, as I said already, is not a real problem. Typically just, I mean, if you don't think that you will be able to modify the preconditioning matrix to the iteration in an optimal way, then probably will anyway choose a preconditioning matrix that's constant, and then of course this variant is probably the best one to choose. Yeah, okay, now actually we I have discussed all the minimization methods that I wanted to introduce. Let's still now kind of compare them a little bit. And well, I want to give you essentially kind of some hints which method is good for what kind of problem. Well, so we have seen in principle we have two classes of methods. We have the steepest descent methods that have a slow convergence, that have a convergence that's right proportional to the condition number. And then we had all those other methods that have a faster convergence rate, which is perhaps something like the square root of the condition number. And but we also we know that all those methods assume that we are in a quadratic region. Of course, if we are close to the minimum, then we are to a very good approximation in a quadratic region. But if we start our iteration, we are perhaps frequently far away. And then actually there's no really a reason for using those rapidly converging methods. So in this case, typically the best thing is just to start with some kind of steepest descent, do a few steepest descent steps until kind of see how the convergence of your steepest descent is slowing down. And then that's also typically an indication that you are then in a quadratic region. And then you can switch over to some of those methods that have a faster convergence rate. Well, but of course, we have now several of those methods. So what are the differences? I mean, the conjugate gradient has a big disadvantage that one iteration requires more than one energy and force evaluation because you have to do this line minimization. On the other hand, of course, this line minimization makes things more stable because, of course, you are guaranteed kind of to go down in each iteration. So if you are in a quadratic region, then, I mean, typically, as I told you already, the quasi-Newton methods are kind of considered to be optimal. That's true if you have, for instance, if you don't have any constraints, but for instance, if you have some constraints, then quasi-Newton methods are kind of difficult to apply, whereas in this case, the DIS method is very good. In the DIS method, right, you remember, you don't have you just need a set of error vectors and gradients. And whenever you have such a sequence, then you can set up your linear system of equations and calculate an improved solution. And there's no really prescription how you have to choose this sequence of error vectors, gradients, and so on. So that has a lot of flexibility, which means that you can apply it, as I said already before, for a constraint a minimization problem. So if you have such a constraint minimization problem, you can do a DIS step to get from one iteration to the next. And then after this update, probably your approximate solution does not satisfy anymore exactly your constraints, but you can kind of modify, you can change it in such a way that it fulfills the constraints in an exact way. And then you can do the next step of this DIS iteration. Yeah, both DIS and quasi-Newton, right, they require just one energy and force evaluation for each iteration. And that, of course, yes, that makes them faster typically than the conjugate gradient method where you need more than one energy and force evaluation. As I said, minimization methods are extremely important in physics and in science in general. And we have now covered, I think, quite a big spectrum already of minimization methods. But of course, there are still many, many more. And for instance, in this project, then on page 84, for instance, you can implement another minimization method, which is actually based on molecular dynamics. So essentially, the basic idea is that you have some kind of surface, and on this surface, that could be a potential energy surface, on this surface, you look for a minimum, and essentially you can imagine that you put a sphere there, which is kind of which has some friction, and then this sphere, of course, will kind of roll down in a minimum, and that's, for instance, that's kind of the basic idea, for instance, for this fast inertial relaxation algorithm that you can implement, for instance, in this project that starts then on page 84.